By now, thousands of women have sent comments to the LDS Church's official Instagram page responding to a post sent earlier this month. It was an excerpt, a clip, from a talk given at a gathering celebrating the anniversary of the church's women's organization, the Relief Society. One of the Relief Society leaders, a woman named Annette Dennis, said, and here's part of the quote, "There is no other religious organization in the world that has so broadly given power and authority to women." The church expanded the post a little later to give some context to the assertion, and defenders of the faith have tried to clarify that Sister Dennis was making a larger point about the unique nature of the Mormon priesthood. But if you just look at the actual practical things women can or cannot do in the church versus what women can or cannot do in other churches, the claim is just demonstrably false. One LDS woman told the New York Times, who covered the story, that this particular moment is important because it was being driven by mainstream Latter-day Saint women. And so she said this no longer fits a narrative that this is just a bunch of fringy feminists. Caitlin is a mostly active member of the church. She's in her 20s, lives in Provo. She described getting chills and tears reading the comments. So she said her own.
For so much of my life, how I saw everything was like through the lens of the church. And I dedicated my life to it. I served a mission and chose to go to a church school, pursued marriage at like a pretty young age, and, you know, just have put in so much time and effort and resources into like contributing to the church. And when I came across the post, my immediate feeling was just kind of like that it was just like a lip service, because I feel like it's pretty obviously not true that there are no other religious organizations in the world that give power and authority to women. And the more I was reading through the comments, the more, I guess you could say, like, fired up I got, the more, like, they were just really resonating with me. And I just wanted to be like, you know what, yeah, I want to add my voice to this, that I also feel this way. And seeing even, like, a couple acquaintances of mine commenting, and then just the different feelings and experiences they expressed were things that I had also been feeling and experiencing. And so it felt really validating in that way. The way I see it is women make miracles happen all the time with their faith and their love. But in the church, there's no authority with that. There's no positions of authority or way to have your voice heard, like, in decision-making processes. Like, I feel I have power, but in reality, like, within the structure of the church, I don't. And so it's like, oh, we value you, but we're actually not going to, like, let you exercise any authority. We just want you to be here. That part of the comment, when I talk about, I'm tired of our cries falling on deaf ears and just being tired, it's just a lot of times, I guess, being in the church feels like you don't really have a voice. Like, it kind of feels like I'm just, like, talking at a wall or a rock or something when I voice my concerns. And it's just, it's tiring, it's exhausting to be always given the same answers that don't really address, like, the issues. And it's tiring to care a lot about this organization and the people in it and want it to be better. I have always been that person who is like, I will never, you know, like, turn my back on this. But it just keeps getting harder, and I think maybe I speak for myself, but I think a lot of other women in my life, like, I just don't know how much longer we can go without having, like, some clarification on things or, like, changes institutionally.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. We should say there were lots of comments supporting Sister Dennis's assertion. And as you'll hear, this conversation about priesthood can get kind of abstract. But today in the program, we want to talk about the way Mormon women are reacting to the question about how much power or even how much say they actually have in their church on a day-to-day basis. We'll have with us for the hour three women who are all members of the LDS Church. Or on the books, anyway. Nyland McBain is a women's advocate and the author of a number of books about Mormon women. Jana Reese is a senior columnist for Religion News Service. And Celeste Davis is a writer and a spiritual director. She's no longer an active participant in the faith. I want to begin with first reactions. Nyland, let's start with you, but I want to hear all of you on that. When you first read it, what was your first impulse? You told us you actually thought it was a joke. Is that right?
I did, and I don't mean that flippantly. I mean, I was in my room, I think it was at the end of the day. I was, you know, scouring Instagram, just scrolling through, and I saw the post, and my husband was there in the room with me, and I read it out loud to him in real confusion. I didn't know what the intent of it was. And to be clear, at the time that I saw it, it was just the original statement. Yeah. It was the single sentence that was presented almost just as a live tweet from the event. Mm. It was paired with an artwork that was not credited. And I guess my first reaction was surprise that it hadn't gone through any sort of filter. It seems like a statement like that is posted on the general church's Instagram account should have some sort of filter. It shouldn't be a forum for a live tweet. It actually should be curated content, and it clearly was not that.
Mm. Celeste, what did you think? First impulse.
Yeah, I had heard rumblings of it, but I initially was just like, oh, the church said something inflammatory, like what's new? I didn't feel the need to go seek it out. But then one of my friends was like, this comment section is healing me as a woman. So that made me check it out. And the quote initially, I was like, who put this through? Because immediately I was just like, this is laughably false. But the quote aside, reading the comment section immediately filled me with goosebumps and warm fuzzies just to see women, you know, using their voice, which is so rare on the church's official Instagram account for active Mormon women to be voicing any type of dissent is so rare. And then to be seeing this kind of sisterhood of, you know, commenting on comments and people being seen and heard for some of them for the first time, it really was an empowering moment for me. It was exciting.
Jana Reese, how did you react to it?
I didn't find out about it until later when a journalist contacted me. I had not heard about the story and had been kind of shielding myself and burrowing down to get some work done. And when I did surface to the story, the furor was about comments being deleted and then open wondering about whether the church had done that intentionally. The substance of the remarks that had been made, I didn't read until after that. And I think in context, it certainly helped to see the larger context because that one snippet of the talk is so unfortunate. And I think as Celeste has said, it is just demonstrably not true that women in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints have more power and authority than women do in many other religions. So the question then is, why is this happening? What I have seen in the last week has been a lot of people accusing the church of gaslighting them. And I do want to push back on that because gaslighting, by definition, is when someone is manipulating you intentionally with lies, something that they know is not true. And that's not the case here. This is something that many people within the church totally believe. And therefore, it just doesn't meet the gaslighting benchmark, but it's still really troubling that so many people do hold this view and will blithely state that our church is leading out in this way when it simply isn't.
Nylan, you said that it almost seemed kind, at least the initial one, like there, it came out in this clip, right? Like it was this almost flippant, you said, kind of soundbitey. And this was interesting. You said that because of the way that at least initial burst came out, you said women weren't, this is how you put it to us, weren't lulled into the context. And it just seemed really jarring. Explain what you meant by that.
The initial clip uses three words that I think are particularly loaded, and I feel really strongly in these discussions about defining our terms, yeah. You know, and I think when you're looking at such disparate responses, you have to figure out what each party is bringing to the table when they're defining these terms. And the initial quote included three terms: given, power, and authority. And, you know, the claim of authority is the claim of the Restoration. It's the claim of the Latter-day Saints, that we have the authority to work in God's name and that that's been given to us exclusively, uniquely in this latter day. And it's what sets us apart from other religious institutions. So when Sister Dennis is saying that we have the authority given to us by the church, I see her using that term with that context. It's that context of the idea that what we do as representatives of God on earth is approved. It's representative of what God would want us to do. And in that sense, she was just using that term as it means to her, that we are loved by God, that women are equally sort of given the appropriation by God to act in his name, right? And then when we do service, when we teach, when we minister, when we parent, we are God's hands on earth. I think that that's what that word means to her. But when it was taken out and just sort of bombshelled on us like that, authority for us meant something very different. Our instinctive reaction as 21st century American women is authority is the opportunity to have a decision-making place at the table and have the decisions that you make be respected and stand. And under that definition, which clearly most of the commenters read it as, it is patently false.
I think this is going to be really confusing for people who are listening who have no idea what you're talking about in terms of like priesthood, people who aren't familiar with the sort of inner workings of Latter-day Saint power or whatever. Jana, what do you say? What the church has been saying, there's this difference between authority and power in the priesthood. Like, what's the difference between that again? Like, say a little bit more about that so we can – because ultimately where we're going to go is, all right, how does that translate to what a woman can actually do in her home ward or whatever? But it seems like such a sort of a basic question that may be confusing. I think it's confusing to me. Like, what's the difference between authority and power? How do you describe it?
That is an excellent question. In fact, that is the question of the hour. That's at the heart of all of this. And, you know, I think that Sister Dennis is caught in the crossfire for saying out loud essentially what has been the church's position and has been relatively accepted. And now it is being questioned in a way that is pretty interesting. Why is that happening now? So the church has not delineated a strong difference between priesthood power and priesthood authority. I think the church is going to have to do that now, because you can't keep telling women you have access to all of this priesthood power, nothing is denied to you, but you also can't have any calling that has the word authority after its name, and you can't do the following things at church. You can't bless people. You can't heal the sick. So all of these things that the church has done to sort of clamp down on female authority, you know, those have longstanding consequences. And I think women are rightfully confused. It's wonderful that the church's rhetoric has changed to tell women that we have priesthood power. Thank you. That's terrific. But the church has not given us any more authority than we had before it started using that rhetoric. And therein lies the confusion. What has changed for a woman in the church at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday, right? Nothing, I don't think. There have been a few incremental changes, including to the temple ceremony under President Nelson, but nothing that gives them priesthood authority in the way that we have defined that in the church.
Celeste, want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I don't remember growing up in the church being told that I had the priesthood. I don't remember that. I don't remember being told that. I only remember that since, I don't know, 2014-ish, when there was books, and in my mind, perhaps as a kind of answer to the call from the ordained women movement of, please, will you pray about us getting the priesthood? And then the answer, oh, you already have the priesthood. So a lot of women in that comment section were saying, please give us actions and not just words. You can say the words, you have the priesthood, but where is the proof? What has changed? How do we, did I just forget that someone laid their hands on my head when I was 12 and was ordained with the priesthood? Did I miss that somehow? Like, how do we have that?
And I think that that's, for me, that's really at the crux of the conversation as well, is this distinction between feeling loved and having a structure that empowers you, right? And I think that's where we start talking at crossroads with each other, and that I feel like the conversation always stalls. When an apologist or a defender of the church comes in and says, but I feel loved. I feel loved too. I mean,
that's,
I can't
not the question
tell you
saying.
How many wonderful men there are in the church, starting in my own home, my own ward. That is not the question. The question here is, can we continue to thrive as an organization and as a people under a objectively, factually based patriarchal structure? It is an inherently sexist organization, and that is a fact. And if people come and try to whitewash that, or if it's hidden in propaganda, or if it's denied, it rings false and hollow, because it is. And I think that there's nothing more that the women in those comments would have loved to hear than for somebody to come up and say, you know what? This stinks. In fact, my own 15-year-old daughter, I spend a lot of time thinking about this and talking about it. And I've been an activist for this for many years. And yet at home with three daughters, I always try to put on a strong face, right? Look at the great benefits that we get from being members of this church. Look at the gospel of Jesus Christ. Look at all these wonderful people in our lives. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know. And at one point, I kind of lost my cool. And I remember at the dinner table, we were talking about something. And I said, it's wrong and it's awful. And I hope it changes. And my 15-year-old started crying.
Wow.
And she said, it means so much to me that you actually acknowledged that. Because we always feel like you're trying to put on a good face and say, oh, you know, it's worth it, stick it out, right? And in my heart, and I was being vulnerable, and that's what I truly do believe. I was showing my true colors at that moment, you know, not being mom, but just being myself and saying, this feels wrong. I don't know why we do it like this. This is so frustrating. Why do we do it like this? And for me to just be vulnerable and acknowledge that to her meant so much. She felt seen, she felt heard, and she felt reinvigorated to continue participating, because we were in this together as saying, hey, this something's really kind of wacky here. We don't know what to make of this. But, you know, it's better than this false optimism that we seem to be projecting.
Nyland McBain, she's the author of a number of books, including Women at Church, Magnifying LDS Women's Local Impact. We also had with us Jenna Reese. She's a senior columnist for Religion News Service. And Celeste Davis is a writer and a spiritual director. I want to speak in practical terms for a moment. Can we just take a moment and make it clear what a Latter-day Saint woman, you know, cannot do in their church? I mean, I was listening to a list the other day of things that women cannot do. And I think some of this is obvious because it's connected to actually having the priesthood, actually having been ordained of the priesthood. So women can't, you know, do blessings. They can't pass the sacrament. They can't do ordination, stuff like that. Okay, that's clear. But there's the other stuff that seems like there could be – it wouldn't take much to change some of this stuff without causing – much of a stir, really reworking doctrine. They can't speak last at meetings. That was kind of interesting. Apparently, they shouldn't be sitting on the stand. They can't hold their own babies when their babies are being blessed. They can't make decisions unless they're approved by male church leaders. They can't preside over their own kinds of meetings. So I want to hear, Celeste, maybe you, talk a little bit about those practical things. This is not an abstract thing. These are the actual things they cannot do. Do you want to talk about that, please?
Sure. I mean, when you have a calling where you are set apart with the priesthood to do a calling, it becomes very apparent very quickly just how handicapped you are by being a woman, because you have to go through a man. For instance, when I served in the primary presidency over the children's organization, and we were responsible for calling new teachers. Well, we couldn't just call teachers. We couldn't just say, like, I would like you to be a teacher. We had to go through men every time we wanted that approved. And very, very, very often they would not be approved, even though we felt we were using the power we were given as we were set apart to pray and receive revelation. And for these people that we took very seriously, who we were going to ask to do different positions and be the chorister and be the teachers, but we couldn't just ask them. We had to go through men. And also the men could take our teachers at any time without even telling us. Often we would just find out sitting in the pews on Sunday from the pulpit. We would just find out that three more of our teachers had been taken from us without anybody telling us. And same in the young women's organization over the teenage girls. It's that same structure. And even, you know, in the girls' camp, there has to be a man present at the girls' camp. You're just handicapped right and left so often by budget restrictions or just a lot of management decisions. All has to pass through a man.
Jana, how do you understand that? If this doesn't seem to be connected to some sort of doctrinal thing, and maybe it is, I don't know, but it doesn't seem to be. So how do you understand it? Is it a cultural thing?
Certainly, culture plays a part. We have a long history of being very cautious about sharing power with women. And that is what patriarchy is all about. You asked Doug about what women can't do in the church. And, you know, it's a long list. I've been studying this for a long time, but honestly, when I read Cynthia Winward's list, she has a fantastic Substack post that's just called What Women Don't Get in Our Church. I would encourage everyone to read this, What Women Don't Get in Our Church. And it's a long list. There were some things on there that I actually was learning about for the first time, just administrative things that aren't part of my life. My own calling is that I am the stake historian and ward historian for my stake and ward. And the way that ward and stake histories are collected and given to the church is changing pretty drastically this year. And as they've been rolling out that program, I was kind of intrigued to read that for the moment, I have the power to approve when someone submits a story. So the idea is that individual leaders in wards and stakes can upload their own photos from youth conference, for example, or a Relief Society activity. And then it just has to be approved by someone before it goes into the ward's official history. And it says, you know, who is authorized to approve? And at the stake level, it's essentially the stake history specialist, the stake clerk, or a member of the stake presidency. And my reaction when I read that is, I wonder how long they'll let me do that.
Until they find out, you mean?
Well, I wonder how long they will allow women to have this calling at the stake level. Because this is the only time in more than 30 years as a member of the church that I have the power to overrule something that a man has done, contributed, or make a decision that is binding on an adult male. There are no other scenarios in our church when women get to make decisions that are binding on adult males.
Jana, I want to build on that for a moment, because I think another red herring that we often encounter aside from this first one that I mentioned earlier about saying, well, I feel loved and appreciated. A second one is to say, well, if you're in a calling, you have the stewardship over that calling. Just magnify the calling. Just do what you want. You know, ask forgiveness later. Don't ask permission. Ask forgiveness later. And I think that that's very damaging as well, because there are certainly some areas in which we can just you know, do what we want and then ask forgiveness later. And one of those, in fact, one of the things that I do in my ward is I make the program every week, and I routinely put the wife or the woman last. And I'm in a ward in which nobody bats an eye about that. And that's very gratifying. And that is an indication of something that is much more of a cultural practice than any sort of policy as yet from above. But to your point, Jana, a lot of times when people do try to stretch their sense of stewardship and be creative in those callings, they do get their hands slapped. And I have to say, as the author of a book 10 years ago that highly encouraged that approach, the most discouraging thing for me over these past 10 years has been hearing those stories of people who tried to experiment and tried to be more inclusive and then did get their hand slapped. That's been very painful for me. And I know that all of us kind of that follow this conversation are aware of the most egregious example of that from the fall, where women and male leaders in the Bay Area were trying to have women sit on the stands to improve the optics of our meetings, and then we're told that they couldn't do that. And I just want to emphasize your point that even within this paradigm of callings and magnifying your calling and having stewardship in a calling, you're always walking a fine line. You always can get your hands slapped. You can always have it rolled back. And it really just depends on who finds out what, when, and what their character is and how important these kinds of things are to them.
I want to talk a little bit about how we got to this point. So let's back up to the beginnings of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. When Joseph Smith founded the church, what was the role he had in mind for women? And how does that differ from the role that you see today? Celeste, let me begin with you. Do you want to take that one?
Well, my mind is going in two directions, because the church likes to really hold up the story of the Joseph Smith who founded the Relief Society, which, yes, was much more independent and didn't have so much male oversight than the Relief Society we have today, where we have to get approval for all of the decisions. It ran much more independently and on its own, really like by women, for women, without male oversight. And so the church really holds up, I've heard many quotes and videos and examples of that Joseph Smith kind of empowering the women's group to do things on their own and giving them that stage.
But you're not buying it.
But then I also know of the Joseph Smith who was secretly doing, you know, marrying women behind his wife's back and, you know, threatening 14-year-old girls, trying to persuade them to marry him. And just I know those kinds of stories. So I don't know. I'm still a little bit of two minds when it comes to Joseph Smith and women. But if we go purely on his actions of how he treated women and not his words, the story is not so flattering.
Is it true then, do you think? It sounds super complicated. So maybe you can't just say women had power in the initial days and they lost power because Brigham Young was kind of a jerk and that's where it stayed. Or like how Nylan McMaine, how do you think about the larger story?
I've actually written a book about this too. the history of the post-Joseph era for Latter-day Saint women is fascinating in this regard. The Relief Society did get rolled back a little bit under Brigham Young, and yet you have a period of incredible flowering at the end of the 19th century when Latter-day Saint women were leading out in the national suffrage movement. And they were doing that with the support of the Brethren, not in spite of the church, but because of the church's support and because of the structure of the Relief Society. And I think it gets us to this really interesting point that this comparing and contrasting to today, then they used the structure of the Relief Society to act. And they had a specific purpose and they had a specific goal in mind for the betterment of women in the nation and in the world. And they had a newspaper through which they did that. And they had a budget through which they did that. And they had specific projects through which they did that. And they were empowered for decades to achieve really incredible things. Utah was the first place an American woman voted under an equal suffrage law, partly because of this ethos, right? And then as we move into the 20th century, we can map the rolling back of that through the 20s and 30s and into the correlation of the mid-20th century, when the budget and the opportunity to create their own lesson plans and their opportunity to support various national organizations like the Red Cross, et cetera, and then the opportunity to no longer run the welfare department of the church, things like that, were all rolled back and put under the priesthood department.
Why?
Why?
Why was that all rolled back?
Oh,
what happened?
This is my next book. My quick theory is that in many ways it did follow the trajectory of the mid-century American culture, that where post-World War II there was this sort of return of men that happened throughout our society, where women had to give up their sort of Rosie the Riveter jobs and return to the home fires to make a suitable reentry for the men. And in the 1950s, we have a stereotypical American middle class family that was very much aligned with the church's vision of what they wanted to be. I mean, ever since Brigham Young entered the Salt Lake Valley, he was trying to become American. He appealed for statehood 7 times. There was a sort of pathological drive in him to be American and to be aligned with the country that had kicked him out, essentially, right? Mm. And in 1950s, we achieved that. And I point to that moment at the Mount Rushmore when the Tabernacle Choir sang and was dubbed by the media as America's Choir. And it's sort of a chiastic relationship where we had started very far apart. And then we come to this wonderful meeting point where everybody declares victory. And then the 1960s and 70s come to America, and the church kind of just digs its heels in and says, "Well, we arrived. We're gonna stick with that, right? We're gonna stick with that sort of
because what? Because that means in the Eisenhower days that the role of women is limited.
Yes,
and we're gonna stick with it. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
We're gonna stick with that because I think it becomes just a calcified, entrenched cultural practice that doesn't have doctrinal weight to sort of wake us up from it. And I think that's another thing that women respond to today is we have these very bold claims of restoration and continuing change, and we just don't see it. We don't see an appetite for it in this particular area.
I'm just thinking, I don't know that the problem is that we're not asking. I think we have a lot of evidence that women have been asking for structural change, and yet it's been denied.
And I don't think it's going to come from within. I don't know if that's of interest to go to that.
What do you mean? Yeah, while you brought it up, you mean that change has to begin from the outside?
Well, if you look at the two other major social changes that the church has participated in over the course of its 200-year history, the ending of polygamy and the practice of plural marriage, and then the acceptance of black men into priesthood ordination— both of those were the results of external pressure, political, financial, and proselytizing pressure that prohibited the church from actually getting what it wanted and accomplishing other goals, right? Growth in particular, statehood in the case of polygamy, right? And then missionary growth in Brazil and other places in the case of blacks in the priesthood in the 70s. And so, I just think that a similar kind of limitation to our missionary growth, our ability to function fully in certain countries, our ability to have proselytizing presences in certain countries will have to be, or maybe our tax-exempt status will have to be curtailed or limited because we are a sexist organization. Denmark is going to, it may require something like Scandinavian countries to say, hey, we're not going to let your missionaries in here anymore.
Until you change your policies. A college team says we're not playing BYU
exactly.
Until you change.
That's another example that happened in the 70s. Because I just think it's too easy for our community to come to its own defense and say, well, this is the way God wants it to be.
But we had all these comments from mainstream Latter-day Saint women responding to this post, thousands and thousands of responses, and then thousands and thousands, like an exponential increase in the number of likes and people talking about it. But that's all internal.
Yes.
So you're not suggesting that won't make a difference? It won't make the difference. Maybe.
We've been having this conversation for a long time. Huh. And I think that it's too easy for us to point to the very real progress that the church's presence, or the very real emancipation or liberation or whatever you want to call it, that the church's presence gives to women in certain parts of the world. I think it's too easy for the church leadership to fall back on that and say, well, but look at what we're doing in Africa. Look at what we're doing in some South American countries. Our women have never been happier. Women have never been, you know, have never had an opportunity to teach a lesson before. And now they do. Isn't that wonderful, right? I think it's too easy for us internally to fall back on that. I think it's too easy for us to say, well, we're peculiar people, and we have too much rhetoric around wheat and chaffs and around, you know, those who are not willing to follow the prophet just to be able to just justify them leaving, right? We have too much rhetoric and too much a sort of sense of peculiarity about us to really lean into the big tent mentality, right? We tend to fall back on a small tent mentality, that this is the way it's supposed to be. There's supposed to be a sifting. There's supposed to be wheat and chaff. There's supposed to be people who leave. There's supposed to be people who can't abide this, right? And I think that language provides too much cover. We're not as much going out and saying, listen, we're big tent. We're going to do everything we possibly can to make sure people feel like they have a home here. And we're certainly not suffering from the lack of tithing. So why would the leadership care?
That's Nylan McBain. We also have with us Jana Reese and Celeste Davis. Celeste, you said something, wrote something actually, that I want to mention. You wrote that the feeling of success wouldn't, for some women, you say, wouldn't be the church changing. It would be women themselves changing. As you wrote, finding freedom outside of the patriarchal hierarchy. So would you say a little bit more about that? Is it that they don't want – do they really want the actual priesthood itself? Some want to be ordained with it, but it doesn't seem like this was something, Nylan, you pointed out. You didn't see any of the posts saying, hey, give me the priesthood. But they want their own thing. Is that – Celeste, let's start with you on that. Do you think that's what you're seeing?
Well, I'll just speak for myself here. And this is why I got excited reading these stories where women were voicing their authentic feelings and their authentic experiences. Because what I hope for women is that they start to believe themselves, that they start to prioritize their own voice and their own desires, and that they really, you know, give themselves that throne of authority over their own lives and over their, to start to prioritize their own desires. And I do think that voicing your pain, voicing your real lived experience can be so empowering, that that's why I felt excited. I do think that a lot of women don't want the priesthood because to them, I've heard that a million times, like, I would never want to be bishop. What, you want me to do more jobs? You want me to have more responsibility? I am already at my max with my kids and my callings. And please, no, don't give me any more responsibility or jobs to do. No, thank you. But I do think they want to be heard. They want to be seen. They want to be respected. They want to be treated as peers. They want their opinions to matter, their voices to matter. They want to be seen and heard.
I'm going to jump in here and say, I do want the priesthood, and I am not ashamed to admit that. It's amazing to me how the mentality in the LDS Church is that it's wrong to want the priesthood if you haven't gotten it. Even as we are also saying that the priesthood is the power of God to act on the earth, why wouldn't any Christian desire that? That doesn't make a lot of sense. And it is also interesting to me when women perform this femininity, when they have this approach and they say, I couldn't possibly ever want the priesthood. I don't want that responsibility. I think that that is the only time in LDS culture when it is considered acceptable culturally and theologically to shirk your duty. Because we have such a shoulder to the wheel, you know, a beautiful approach with everyone helping, everyone working. And if you don't contribute to that mentality, then, you know, the idea is that there's something wrong with you, unless it's about women having the priesthood, in which case our sexism trumps our desire for everyone to put their shoulder to the wheel.
I want to come back to the actual sort of story itself and the way it's been processed. I think it's interesting to see the reaction, the initial reaction from the PR department of the church. It said the church's social media team acknowledges the numerous comments that have emerged in response to this post. Thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts, feelings, and experiences. And then it says, your comments will be shared with church leaders who follow these issues. What do you make of that response? First of all, that it came from the social media team. Like, this wasn't a statement from church leaders that said something like, wow, we hear you. It's, hey, we're going to take this to someone who's in charge. What did you all make of that? Jenna Reese, what did you make of it?
Well, on the positive side, it was a response. And I think that is huge for the church. You know, I've been writing about the LDS church for a long time. And when I started at RNS in 2012, the church was not yet on social media in any important way. And I remember writing about when it got on Twitter, essentially the apostles were each following five people or something. And there was nothing interactive about it. There was nothing social about this interaction. They were using broadcast media mentality in this new media space, and it just wasn't working at all. So there has been progress, I think, in the church's growth in its various social media channels, and also in the fact that it is reading comments and at least acknowledging that people have different points of view. So let's say progress has happened there. In terms of it not coming from a church leader, yes, that's disappointing, not particularly surprising. I do hope that, you know, perhaps we'll be able to hear something more about this in general conference. Wouldn't it be great if we had someone delineate what is the difference between priesthood power and priesthood authority, and what can women do with the power that we have? What are the concrete things that women can do in the church that we weren't doing already when you didn't tell us that we had priesthood power? That's what I would like to know. It would be great if someone in an official capacity responded, whether that's one of the General Relief Society officers or one of the general authorities of the church.
Are you expecting that?
Yes, I am, actually. I think
Whoa.
That, well, I think
Nylan is, Nylan is surprised.
Eternal optimist, Jana. Good for you. Good for you.
Well, let me explain. I do think that this has struck such a chord that the church will look very, it will not paint the church in its very best light if there is no response forthcoming. If you read those comments and you see the pain that women are expressing, the heartache that women are expressing, to simply blithely ignore that on the part of the church, it will have damaging ramifications. If they are truly concerned about people who are leaving the church, if they're truly concerned, especially about young women who are wondering what the heck their place is supposed to be in this institution, yes, they owe us a response.
Nylan, what are you expecting?
I'm not expecting anything. And that's not because I don't think the Public Affairs Department is doing its job. I think that the response was gracious. I think it was unexpected. I think it contributed to the post being that space of sisterhood that it turned out to be, and I think it was very beautiful. I think General Conference is organized long in advance. I think it's a platform for the multitude of 70s to have practice speaking to large audiences, and it's a sort of training ground and testing ground for future apostles. And I don't think that anybody in the planning of General Conference truly sees it as a cultural signifier for the direction of the whole church. Maybe I'm a little jaded in that, and hopefully I will be proved wrong.
Okay, so Nylan doesn't think you'll hear anything. Jana thinks you will. Celeste?
Sorry to be the pessimist of the group. I'm expecting to be actively disappointed in having women be put in their place a little bit.
We got full range here.
I'm expecting to be told to like some more head patting, like, you are so important, women. You are so important and we love you so much and we're so thankful to you and you are so important to God. And then to be told like, and you do already have the priesthood. That's what I'm expecting. I will say though, to the church's favor, I have never seen them respond in their social media, in any of their social media accounts in the past 10 years that I can think of that I've personally seen. I've never seen them respond and say, we hear you, we see you, like they did. So there's that. Like, that's a change in a positive direction. It did say, you know, the social media team, not the general authorities, and that they'll be sharing it to leaders who follow these issues, which that could be anybody.
Yeah.
But also, I wanted to say, I just have it up on my phone now, and Sister Dennis has responded. And she has entered the chat. Would you like me to read that?
Yes.
Just like less than an hour ago in the comment thread of that post. She says, last week I spoke during a worldwide Relief Society broadcast. I want to thank all of you who were a part of that historic gathering. An excerpt taken from my remarks generated responses from thousands of sisters. Thank you for reaching out and taking the time to share your feelings. As we read through the comments, we were moved by some of the experiences you've had. As a member of the General Relief Society presidency, I can assure you that we and our church leaders are listening and learning from the things you have shared with us. We love and pray for you and all of our sisters everywhere. Please know we hear you, we need you, and we care.
Hmm. All right, Celeste, respond. Hold on, Nayland. What do you think?
A very well-crafted PR response. I mean, a step in the right direction.
Okay. Nayland?
Yeah, I just think it's worth celebrating just the sheer fact of it. Because as Celeste is saying, I don't remember anything like this ever before either. And, you know, I vacillate between, you know, what Celeste was saying about the surveys, and I've been part of panels that they've brought in as well, and the lists that have been developed, and then just the sneaking suspicion that they are kind of just in a bubble and that, you know, getting out among the particular demographic that is so painfully affected by these issues may not be something that they encounter every day. Maybe this is new. Maybe this is revelatory to her and to our other leadership. I don't know.
But I think, as you've all said, in one way or another, you're looking for actions, not words, right?
Absolutely. The words are ambiguous. The words are amorphous. They always have been. There's been much too much ink spilled on trying to spin out and parse out what they actually mean. My hope is that somebody is thinking of some structural way to give purpose. We've used this term roles, which I don't really like. I really do think it's about these actions. If we're not going to, you know, seal on earth and seal in heaven through priesthood ordinances, even though Jana might like to, what can we do that is unique and not the same, not usurping, not trying to drive out men or claim to get to a point where – and to get to a point that we are able to find our own sense of self and our own strength and our own sense of identity and craft that for ourselves within this institution. That's a big ask. And I hope that the church as an organization will help us as women get closer to that.
Nayland McBain, she's a women's advocate, the author of a number of books, including Women at Church, Magnifying LDS Women's Local Impact. Jana Reese is a senior columnist for Religion News Service, and Celeste Davis is a writer and a spiritual director. I should mention that we reached out to the church. We invited a church spokesperson or a leader to join us. No response there. We also didn't get any additional comments or statements. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. You can email us at radiowest@kuer.org. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Carrie Watson is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.